Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live, where we bring you the best in music, books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us. Now, here is your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. You know, I think these days, if you're turning on your television and watching any sort of news, politics is one of those things that you're not going to be able to get away from. But how much do you really know the person, and what kind of connection do the people that we hear about in the news, do they typically have with the people that are watching them on television or around them? Our next guest is someone who has written a book that I've really found fascinating. We're going to be speaking with journalist and author Erin Aubrey Kaplan about her book, I Heart Obama. And yes, that is President Barack Obama that she's talking about. It's a fascinating look not only at how people of color see him, but also how even the president sees himself, what his own writings have to say about his life, as well as, of course, the connection he's been able to make with people, and in some cases, the disconnect that may actually exist. We're going to talk to Erin not only about the journey of writing this book, but what it was like for her to have some amazing conversations that she chronicles in the book, and what she hopes you as readers are able to take away from what she's been able to glean, not only about the president, but also the way that so many people feel about him today. Before we get into all that, though, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this.
I used to drive all over town for low prices, but now I let Walmart's incredible new Savings Catcher do the work for me. I just enter my Walmart receipt online and Savings Catcher does the rest. It compares the prices I paid for items at Walmart with advertised prices from other top stores in my area. And if Savings Catcher finds a lower advertised price, Walmart gives me the difference on an e-gift card. Now that's my kind of work.
Introducing Savings Catcher from Walmart. Go to walmart.com/savingscatcher for details. Eligible items only. Restrictions apply.
Geico presents sharing versus oversharing. Earlier this week, Claire Tippins shared a princess nickname generator, 3 pictures of her dog wearing a tutu, and 2 online quizzes, including, what candy is your dream castle made of? Claire, your sharing has tipped the sugar scale and turned into oversharing. But have no fear, princess. Geico has something worth sharing with your internet kingdom, like how you could save hundreds on your car insurance just by visiting geico.com. No magic wand required. Geico, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
And we're back with Conversations Live. As I said, today we're speaking with journalist and author Erin Aubrey Kaplan. We're going to talk to her not only about her new book, I Heart Obama, but what it was like for her to have some really fascinating conversations with people about the way that they see the president, the way he's perceived, and the impact that his presidency has definitely had on them. If you're just now hearing about the book, we'll tell you a little bit later how you can get it for yourself. But Erin, hello to you, and welcome to the program.
Hi, Cyrus. Thanks for having me.
Hey, the pleasure is definitely all mine. You know, Erin, this book was really interesting to me, and I went into it, you know, as I try to do with everybody who I talk to on this show and every book that I read. I try to go into it without any type of preconceived notions because I honestly didn't know what to expect. But I have to say that I was really excited about the book once I got into it because it is fascinating, and it brings up a couple questions that I'll get into a little bit later that I kind of thought, and I'm curious as to if other people have said the same thing. What has it been like for you already, though, Erin, to be able to see the way that people are responding to the book?
It's been actually very gratifying. So many people kind of said exactly what you said. They saw the title and said, oh, I Heart Obama, must be a Valentine, a love letter to Obama. It's not quite that. It's more complicated than that, and they basically told me, you know, I had thought this, I had felt this, I had never articulated it, I didn't know there were so many ways to look at it, and so it's been really gratifying to hear to get that kind of response. I'm glad that I'm speaking something out loud, maybe that people have thought or carried around a long time, or you know, just having a time to really think about deeply. So it's been really, really helpful to me.
Right. You know, as a journalist, though, Erin, and I'm sure you think about this quite a bit and probably thought about it in going into the book. Today people have such a uneasiness and even, I think, suspicion when it comes to journalists and it comes to covering stories and especially covering individuals who can be polarizing or can be, individuals have very strong opinions about. Did you have any concern about being able to go into this book and be objective and not being able to include as much of yourself in it and let other people and even the president himself in his own words be able to tell the story?
Well, see, that's what I actually did was throw away objectivity, and that freed me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been a columnist a lot, so I don't have any problem putting my kind of voicing my own opinion. So what I say, I kind of get that out of the way in the beginning. I say, okay, I fell in love with Obama, quote unquote, and I kind of let people know where I stand. But I guess I do what I think Michael Dyson calls critical love. So I get myself out of the way, sort of, and then I go to other folks and see kind of compare and contrast. You know, what are they thinking? And how does it differ from my view? How does it overlap? And so, in a way, I don't see this. I have not covered the president per se. I have been a complete Obama watcher, as I describe myself in the book, and many other people have been that too. I've been an observer and a fan, but also a critic and sort of, you know, and a fellow Black American. So I'm all these things, and I kind of let myself be all those things without worrying much about being objective. However, as you say, I also function as a journalist. I talk to people who are, you know, I know don't have my opinions, but I'm curious. I want to know what they think. I want to know, you know, I do want to see, kind of look at all the different facets and see what they say and just see what kind of picture emerges. And so I guess I get to do both. I get to be the unabashed fan or not of Obama, but also his critic. And it's kind of I found that quite liberating, and it took me to places I hadn't quite been before.
And that to me was one of the things that came to me in the book, because I think that what I have tried to do, and mm-hmm. not always successfully, but I try mm-hmm. to do, is to be able to separate. Yeah, exactly. I try to separate my own personal feelings about something and be able to actually go by what's in front of me. And one of the mm-hmm. things that struck me about the book was that in reading these stories of individuals, just taking you out of the equation totally, which is why I was curious about that, just reading, I thought, you know, I get it. I get why so many people are so passionate about him or protective of mm-hmm. him because mm-hmm. of what he represents to them, regardless of whether they honestly know what he stands for on some things, or regardless of whether they even agree with where he stands on some things, just the persona of who he is, how he presents himself, and what that means to them at that moment, I get it. Have you heard that quite a bit, that people, it kind of was a light bulb for people to say, okay, now it's the person, it is him and what he mm-hmm. represents that really has struck them?
You know, you just said it very well. People have expressed that, but not actually, you said it very well, Cyrus, that that you got the personal aspect of Obama, and that's really what I was going for. We have talked endlessly about the political resonance of Obama, you know, what he does, you know, what he's done as president, what his political thinking is. I think we have missed the person, and particularly for Black folk, which is what the book focuses on, we have missed that, and it's important not to miss it, because he is such, as you say, such an important figure, such an important symbol in our history of Black first. I mean, he's a tremendous Black first. He might be the only one. We don't know. He may not create a model for other Blacks to follow, as tends to happen. But I thought, I'm still kind of shocked and kind of reeling from the fact that he's almost out of office, but he was president, has been president for two terms. So I really wanted to get to the personal side. What did that mean for us? How do we feel about him? And I don't mean to be mushy or sentimental about it. I really want to know from other folks, you know, what does he mean personally? And it turns out he means an awful lot personally, to the point where we can disagree strongly with things he does, but still hold him very close as a personal, you know, as a personal totem almost, as a figure, as someone, as a model, and yet also just as another person, another sort of common man amongst us who just did very well for himself. And so he represents so many, he's almost like a Rorschach, almost, you know, he represents all these different threads of America, of sort of Black consciousness, and I found him really, you know, fascinating that way. And other people did too, once I started kind of push past the questions of, you know, what do you think of him politically? Because people, when I talk to them, they automatically just went right to the, you know, well, I disagree with this, I agree with that. And I kept sort of pushing and saying, well, what do you really think about him as a person, as a figure, as a symbol? And then they had to think harder because no one had ever asked them that question. It was really, really interesting. And of course, you know, that legacy, that personal legacy will take a long time to sort out, and there will be other. We're already getting discussions about his legacy. We're getting some comments from some black pundits about his symbolism. His symbolism is very powerful and will be the most important thing about him for us. But I think there will be other aspects of him that we will, detail later. It's very, very early. You know, Obama has not gone away. But I guess I just wanted to get the discussion going.
Sure. I mentioned earlier, well, let me first say, for those who are just tuning in, either on the radio dial or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. We're excited to welcome to our program today journalist and author Erin Aubrey Kaplan. She's the author of the new book, I Heart Obama, and we'll tell you a little bit later how you all can get the book for yourself. One of the individuals that you profile in the book, Erin, is Brenda Jackson. I think she really epitomizes what I was saying earlier about the personal connection that some people feel that, others may not feel.
Mm-hmm.
At the time you were talking to her, at the time around the government shutdown. And one of the things that she says is because they're upset with him. I'll say upset and not the word she says because I'm on the radio dial as well. Because he's a fine black man, she says, with a fine family who's smart, smarter than they are. He's got a mind of his own. And then she went on to say this, and for those who have the print edition of the book, it's on pages 73 and 74. I want to read this because I think this is interesting. I believe, I believe because I have faith. She has read Dreams from My Father and feels like she knows Obama personally. She is thoroughly convinced, more than she was already convinced, that Obama is one of us. He is worth the fight and the heartache. I am surprised pleasantly to hear her say that. Brenda is tough but not very optimistic about things turning out well for black folks, to say nothing for the country at large, another legacy from the movement. She doubts. Surely her belief now means something, will move something. What was it like for you to hear from people like Brenda Jackson and to have her say that she, that she felt as though he was worth the fight and the heartache? And, of course, as all relationships, I guess, would be, or all things we're involved in, what was it like for you to hear her put that into words?
You know, it was kind of heartened me, if I could use that word. She is someone, she's a veteran of the movement. I've talked to many people like this, so they're slightly older than me. But she was, when she said she had faith, she has faith and she doesn't. This is a very complicated kind of part of black consciousness. So much of our culture is about optimism and about symbols, and Obama's such a hopeful symbol. I mean, a black man is president. We're in no position to deny that kind of symbolism. And she's very, very proud, very, very proud. There's a lot of pride, just straight out pride, which is part of the heart. When I say I heart Obama, that's the kind of love I'm talking about. There's this tremendous pride that just can't be denied, and so she feels that very much, and she feels that's going to mean something. But she's also aware that as great as, as this is, it may not get us over. It may not change things. It won't change the direction of the country. It's not going to move mountains. She's also braced herself for the failure. And that I found a really, that kind of complicated feeling was something I found over and over again. And that's really what Obama, I thought, brought to the surface for so many people, even the young people. It kind of cut across generations. He's this wonderful, a symbol. However, given the state of the country and the history of the country, he's not going to be appreciated. We know that. He's going to be minimized. He's not going to be given his due because we're used to that. But we're going to hold the faith anyway. We're going to appreciate him because no one else will do it. So we have to do it. And there's this interesting mix of pride, optimism, bitterness, resentment, and this kind of distress that the white America, the rest of the country, simply does not know how we feel, doesn't see Obama the same way, and will never see him the same way. Meaning, of course, that we're all kind of suffering the same isolation. We all feel like, that we're not really appreciated. And so Obama, in a way, is an extension. He's a symbol, a great symbol of this unique, position of being president. But also, he's a symbol for the rest of us. And so the way he's treated is the way we've been treated. And so we figure it's the least we can do is to be proud of him, to hold him up, and to not agree with him all the time, but definitely defend his symbolism amongst ourselves. And it's, you know, it's a really complicated job.
Yeah, it's complicated, and I have to ask you this, and I'm meaning this in no way to minimize the mm-hmm. passion that is there, but part of my concern that I have for anybody, and not just talking
sure.
about President Barack Obama, is that you can like somebody,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't necessarily make them good for what they're doing. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I mean
no,
it's
I
almost like
know what you mean.
It's almost like hiring your cousin for a job because they're family, and you know you want them to do right. You want, if someone's going to have it, hey, might as well be somebody I know, someone I can relate to, we can
mm-hmm.
hang out. You know, versus someone right. who comes in who may be more qualified for that position or whatever it might be. But because you feel a connection with them, you hire
mm-hmm.
them. And then, of course, you have to kind of deal with the consequences of that. I mean, what was that balancing like for you? Because in the book, you also, Aaron, talk about these conversations with your family members, some of them who were not as gung-ho about then, you know, candidate Obama. You talk about, I think it was one of your relatives, Harold, who also had his own history that he had been able to be a part of, and wondering if he could bring out his inner Superman. I remember you writing about there.
Right.
I mean, so what was it like for you to kind of go through that balance of, okay, is it enough just to feel something for somebody?
Well, of course it's not enough, right? We all know that. It's one thing to fall in love with someone, then you have to be married to them, and then it's the reality sets in. And you know something? I don't think nobody expected Obama to be perfect president. We just wanted him to be given his due. I mean, we have to talk about what he did, because we have to talk about how he came into office with facing so many challenges. In some ways, he became president at the worst possible moment in American history. There's so much he had to deal with. But even, you know, you mentioned Bob Farrell, who was a very interesting conversation. He's a former freedom rider, actually, and just has a long history of civil rights activism, et cetera. He was, just like Brenda Jackson, he was very, very proud. Very proud. Everybody started off by saying that. Not everybody. But many people started off saying, I'm tremendously proud of what he did. It in some ways is just light years beyond what I could have expected. But the next thing, like Robert Farrell, the next thing he said was, but he's, you know, he's really disappointed me because he has not continued the movement for justice. And how could a black man not do that? And so, but even in talking to him, if he talked about his disappointment and other people expressed their disappointment, it's a personal disappointment. I mean, we have been let down by presidents before, right? I mean,
sure.
That's not a new thing. We have to probably go back to Lyndon Johnson to find a president who kind of upheld addressed directly issues important to black people. I mean, Bill Clinton notwithstanding, that's a whole other conversation. But I even on the level of disappointment and accepting the fact that Obama was, you know, he was not the guy he needs to be at this moment. There was a sense of personal. It was like not a betrayal, but even in the disappointment, in the criticism, there was a sense of Obama we're disappointed because he means more to us, more to me than Bill Clinton or George Bush certainly or whoever. The stakes were so much higher. However you look at this, the stakes were much higher for us this time. In a way, they were high in a way they've never been. Normally, you know, someone comes into office, we cross our fingers and hope they'll get around to certain things. They don't. Oh, well, you know, and we do that with our own black elected officials, by the way. We've had, you know, we have elected officials everywhere, and we don't necessarily take what they do personally. But Obama, because he's president, which is, you know, president is a very personal symbol. I mean, they represent the hopes and aspirations of all Americans, if such a thing is possible. So Obama becomes this great personal, emotional figure for all Americans. But for us, it's just off, you know, through the roof. It's off, it's a person we have not had before in this position. We've had, like I said, a whole history, generations of elected officials, but they are not the same thing. Just not the same thing. And Obama comes along and suddenly he has galvanized, he has illuminated all these hopes and unfinished business and aspirations and that we have not had, have not been illuminated for, I don't think they've been really, I think they've been hiding out for, you know, a generation, a couple generations now. Suddenly he brings them to the light. What do we do with them? How do we measure Obama? We don't even really know how to measure him. There's no real measurement because no one has been in his position before. And I make the point, one point in the book about how, you know, Obama's been compared to Jackie Robinson, right? He's broken a color barrier. But unlike Jackie Robinson came to baseball. He was already an excellent baseball player. All he had to do was play baseball and just kind of, weather the insults and all that. Obama came to office as president, then he had to figure out how to be president and also weather the insults. So I think we gave him a lot of leeway politically and personally because he himself was growing up on the job. He started out one way and then had to, figure out how he was going to do this thing. And I think that's very, very new, very different. He did not come in with the skill set, frankly. He got there, and getting there, of course, was a huge success and may end up being his greatest success, was that he made it there. He made it to the mountaintop, as I say, kind of half ironically at one point.
Yeah. You know, I think it's so interesting. That's why I'm so glad we're having this conversation, Aaron. I believe, and I have to say, I am an optimistic person just by nature.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that struck me, and a question that I've been asking a lot here on the radio side here in Mississippi at WYD, when I talk to people locally on this program, it amazes me, and I'm curious as to your thoughts on this, because in reading the book, I thought it seems as though no one ever thought this would happen, that there would be a person of color as president. That surprises me because I remember being 9 years old and my grandmother telling me I could do anything I wanted and growing up here in Mississippi. And I said, even be president. And she says, if you worked hard, there's nothing you can't do. Mm-hmm. And so I guess when I talk to people, I say, well, did you ever think there'd be a black president? 90% of the people say no. So I'll have to ask you the question. Did you ever think that you would live to see it?
No, not at all. It wasn't even on my radar, and I don't think it was on the radar of anybody else. I mean, your grandmother sounds wonderful, but I think this saying, you can be anything you want, including president, that's an abstract. That's an ideal. That's wonderful. That's like, that's bigger than saying you can be an astronaut. That sounds a lot more realistic. It was one of those things, that just is meant to express how far you can go if you try, and that's wonderful. But I certainly didn't expect it, and not just because it seemed, because of our racial history, it seemed impossible people would elect a black person. Also, politically, it didn't seem to be on anybody's agenda. I mean, Jesse Jackson ran in the 80s, twice, and there was real momentum behind that. But there was nothing, and that was sort of a trial balloon. It was, Jesse Jackson was sort of running, not as a protest, but as, he was kind of, the outsider candidate running to kind of, make a moral statement. Anyway, that went away. And so people were not angling for a black president. Obama did not come out of this great movement or this great national effort to produce a black president. He, in a way, it was his own ambition that got him to where he wanted to go. And that's another the remarkable thing. He did not come out of a mass political movement. He did not come out of a push for voting rights or any sort of ground, grassroots movement. He, as a black leader, that's unusual. And that gets into a whole other issue of whether he's even a black leader. We certainly see him that way. We certainly put him right next to Martin Luther King and even Malcolm X. I've seen him next to Harry Tubman. I've seen him next to, all the freedom fighters in our history. And one chapter discusses, well, does he belong there? Of course, on the one hand, he absolutely does. On the other hand, no, he totally breaks the mold. But so we are still actually wrestling with this phenomenon of him becoming president because, like you say, it was so unexpected. It didn't even seem possible in these really racially polarized times. It really took us by surprise, I think. This is not the 60s. People are not – racial justice is not on the national agenda. It is no longer even a moral issue that I see. And suddenly here comes Obama. So for all these reasons, it took us by surprise. And I think we're still dealing with that surprise. Certainly a lot of white conservatives are dealing with that surprise and not very well. So we haven't had time to really think about, again, what Obama has meant in our history, which is why I wanted to sit down and really think about it and get to, the kind of essence of what he means to us. So it is, the book is about Obama, but really it's more about what how Obama has made us act, how he has changed our thinking, how he has changed our conversations, how we have you know, how he's changed our measurement of our own progress.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned Bob earlier, and I did as well. I want to say this, and then we're going to start to close here. But the thing I think that is so interesting to me, and I guess, again, as I said, I'm an optimistic individual, is that one of the things that Bob recognizes, and that I thought too, which is why I'm so hopeful about this country and hopeful about humanity, is because he could not have become president with just black people. I think, as you know, as discussed in the book, and that others realize that others voted for him, and that says to me a lot. Does that make you optimistic?
It does, and it still amazes me that he was elected twice by a very diverse, contingency of people. That, you know, Bob said right away, I think one of the first things he said was, one of the greatest lessons he took away, one of his greatest sources of hope, was that this great, coalition of people came together and elected Obama. I mean, that's not a small thing. It is not a small thing. And it recalled to Bob, the glory days of the 60s when you had the multiracial movement for black justice. Now, Obama, you couldn't call him he was not a cause of black justice, but people across color lines responded to his symbolism. There was a moment there, and I described in the book, where we're all very, very aware of his symbolism, what this would mean, electing a black president. Everybody was very aware of what that meant, and it moved people as one. I really believe that. Of course, we voted for him because he was qualified, or we were terrified of voting for Bush again, or whatever, but the fact of the matter is people all recognized what they were doing, and they were very clear about what electing him would mean. And that, to Bob, was very, very hopeful, and very hopeful to me. And I'm, unfortunately, like you, I'm not a natural optimist, but I saw a lot of optimism in this phenomenon, in this whole Obama phenomena. That's a mouthful. Whenever I get too depressed or too pessimistic, I go back to the beginning in 2008, and I think about the magic of that moment, because it was magic. In the beginning of the book, I described that magic, and I saw him at one of his rallies during the campaign, and it was magic in a way I had never felt or seen before in my lifetime, and I'm the same age as Obama. So it was really transformative to me. That part was transformative.
Yeah. Well, it's a fascinating book, Erin. So glad I had a chance to read it, and definitely glad I had a chance to discuss it with you. Again, everyone, Erin Aubrey Kaplan has been our guest. I Heart Obama is the title of her new book. It is available through our friends at Amazon.com. And, Erin, how can our audience stay connected with you?
They can go to my website, which is erinaubreykaplan.net, and check out news and information there.
All right. Well, make sure you all stay connected with Erin. For our radio audience, you all stay where you are. We have my conversation with Allison Samuels coming up at the bottom of the hour. She wrote the book, What Would Michelle Do? A Modern-Day Guide to Living with Substance and Style. We've talked about the president, and we're going to talk a little bit about the first lady. For our online audience, we are going to lose you. But, Erin, I hope you will come back. We'd love to have you back on the program again.
Oh, Cyrus, I really enjoyed myself. Thanks for having me.
The pleasure is definitely all mine. And we thank your audience for joining us for another great segment of Conversations Live. For our online audience, if you all came in late, you missed part of the conversation with Erin, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you all can catch the replay right after we go off to air. The link is already available through our social media sites. So head over to Facebook.com/CyrusWeb or go over to Twitter.com/CyrusWeb. You can click on the link there. You can listen to the show completely for free and share it with your friends from there. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live today. You all make it a great one.